after Moshe Rabbeinu asks the Ribbono Shel Olam to appoint a leader that will take charge after he leaves the world, the Medrash says the following. The next parsha in the Torah after that is the parsha of the Korbanos, the daily sacrifice, the Rosh Chodesh sacrifice, Shabbos sacrifice, and all of the Yomim Tovim sacrifices. And the Medrash says that the Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu the following, and it gives a mashal. Says there was a queen who was dying, and she called her husband the king to her bedside, and she said, "Please, after I die, please take care of my children." And the king answered, "Before you tell me to take care of your children, why don't you tell your children to take care of me and to treat me properly and not to rebel against me and to respect me and so on?" So too the Medrash says, that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu. Before you command me about my children in order to appoint them a leader, first tell my children what they should do for me. And that's why the parsha of Korbanos, as Korboni Lachmi Lishai, that God said that tell them about the bringing the sacrifices. Very difficult medrash, right? What's the meaning of the medrash? So I was thinking that first you have to understand the marshal, right? I mean, what is the king telling her? Like, before you tell me to take care of the children, tell the children to take care of me. But the idea is the following: people react to each other almost by nature, like a mirror. Kemayim ponim el ponim. As water reflects a person's face, so too people's hearts reflect each other. And therefore, the king told his wife the following: these are my children, just as much as your children. Right? I can take care of them because you, the queen, begged me at your deathbed to take care of the children. But wouldn't it be better if I took care of the children because it was a natural bond between us, and that I felt naturally inclined to take care of them? Therefore, if you'll tell them how to respect me properly and not rebel against me or whatever, then I will, of course, want to take care of them from just a natural feeling of being their father, because they'll react to me as a father, I'll react to them as a father too. So instead of telling me in an external way, right, to take care of the children, tell them how they can create that bond, and much better to take care of them because of that bond than to take care of them because I'm doing it because you asked me to do it. That's the idea. Same thing over here. The purpose of a leader is to bring the Jewish people closer to God. Keep them in line and bring them closer to God. Okay? And therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu the following: I can appoint a leader who will bring the Jewish people closer to me. But wouldn't it be better if the Jewish people on their own wanted to be closer to me? And then most certainly I would react, God reacts the same way as people react to each other. God is called Silcha, he's called our shadow. He, kibiyachol, accommodates himself to how we act. When we're close to him, he's close to us. When we turn our faces away from him, he turns his face away from us. So God's bond and relationship with us depends on our relationship with him. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, instead of commanding me to appoint a leader in order to bring the Jewish people closer to me, wouldn't it be better to, what's it called, to command them to do something that will bring them closer to me, and memela cause me to want to be closer with them, and of course have a leader that will accomplish that. Same idea as the marshal, right? Better to create that bond intrinsically than artificially just from the outside. Okay. And that is what the korbanos are. The korbanos bring us closer to God in two ways. We bring a korban chatos to atone for our sins, because sins separate between the person and the Ribbono Shel Olam. So by taking away the separation, you're able to bring us closer. And then we have an ola, burnt offering, which brings us closer to God. So we take away the negative, and then we add the positive of having that extra closeness. And the truth is that the sacrifices that are mentioned are mostly the sacrifices that are brought on the Sholosh Regalim and on the Yomim Tovim. The purpose of a Yomtiv is to come to Kibiyachol, be seen by God and see God. This idea of the Jewish people coming closer to God and God coming closer to them. Us seeing Him and Him seeing us. And that's why when we face God and want to come closer to Him, then He faces us. And when we turn our faces away and we don't want to see Him, then He turns His face away from us. So the idea of the sacrifices, especially the sacrifices on a Yontif, are to bring us much closer to God. So God said, instead of artificially asking me to appoint a leader to help, what's it called, make me closer to the Jewish people, better let the Jewish people approach me, get closer to me through the sacrifices, and automatically I'll be closer to them. And of course I'll appoint a leader who will then make a bond between the two of us. Not only are the sacrifices a means of a medium for bringing us closer to God, but the communal sacrifice is even more so, because one of the ways that we're able to bond with the Rabbanu Shalom is by bonding with each other. It says in the Mincha of Shabbos, Ata Echad, the Shimcha Echad, you God are one and your name is one. Umika Amcha Yisrael Goy Echad, who is like your nation Yisrael when they are also one, united, Ba'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael. And this is the antithesis of Mefuzar u'Meforad Bein Ho'amim, what Haman said about the Jewish people. When we're in outside of Eretz Yisrael, then we're scattered amongst the nations of the world. We don't have that unity. When we're not unified, we can't bond with God, who's one. And being in Eretz Yisrael gives us an extra connection to God. So one nation in Eretz Yisrael, which is conducive to bringing us together and bonding us together, because we're all in the same place, we're not scattered amongst the nations of the world, that's when we have that close bond with the Rabbanu Shalom. And that's why a Jew in Chutz Laaretz, it's as if he doesn't have a God, because the intensity of the bond in Eretz Yisrael is so much greater than the intensity of the bond in Chutz Laaretz. It's like it doesn't exist. And that's another reason why at this point God commanded us to bring these sacrifices, because now we're ready to enter Eretz Yisrael. That's where these sacrifices were going to be brought, says the Ramban. So there's a connection between coming into Eretz Yisrael and the sacrifices and bonding with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And God said, before you command me to artificially make a leader who will bond me with the people, why don't you bond me with them in a more essential and meaningful way, by telling them how to get closer to me, and Mamela, I'll be closer with them. But ultimately, that is the purpose of a leader. The purpose of a leader is Ish al Ho'eda. Yifko Hashem Elokei Aruchos Ish al Ho'eda. Ish is like a husband. Just like husband and wife, right, bring the Shechina between them, bring God's presence amongst them. The leader is like the husband, and the Jewish people are like the wife. And together, when there's a good relationship between the leader and the people, God's presence devolves amongst the Jewish people. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was called Isho Elokim. When he blessed the Jewish people at the end of his life, he's referred to as Isho Elokim, meaning the Ish, the person who will bring the Jewish people and bond them to the Rabbanu Shalom and bring them closer to God. And that way, bring God's blessing upon them. And that's why it says that you have a leader, V'lo yia adas Hashem katzon asher ein lohem ro'eh. They shouldn't be like a congregation who doesn't have a shepherd. So the Sfas Emes says, it's not the leader who's the shepherd. It's God who's the shepherd. But the leader makes the people aware that they have a shepherd. He bonds them with the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And therefore, if they don't have a good leader, they'll be like a people who, as if they don't have a shepherd. Of course they have a shepherd, but they won't recognize it. They won't appreciate it. Right? That's why it says, Asher ein lo hem ro'eh, right? That they won't have a shepherd. But the shepherd will be there, but they won't appreciate it. They won't realize it. So the purpose of the leader is to make them aware of their relationship with God. And that's why in the description of the leader. It says, Asher Yetze Lifnehem, Va'asher Yovo Lifnehem. He should go out before them and come in before them. Asher Yotzeim, Va'asher Yivieim. Take them out and bring them in. So the Magid Mivilna explains that the leader functions in two ways. I'm going to enhance what he says a little bit, but basically it's his idea. The way I apply it is going to be a little bit different, but basically what he says is the following. Sometimes the leader leads by example. The people want to follow him. So he goes out before them, sets an example, and they follow the example. Sometimes, however, the people don't want to do what's right. So then the leader has to actively take them out and bring them in. Okay? So sometimes the leader is leading by example, and sometimes he has to actively push the people to what they're doing. Okay? And therefore, the Sfarim say, the Chidush Arim says, Asher Yotzi'ein mituma, he takes them out from the negative, from Tuma, Vayivieim Latarim, brings them to purity. He takes away the negatives, makes the positives, and in that way brings them closer to God. Or, as the Mor V'Shemesh says, Yotzi'ein migashmias, he takes them out of a material existence and brings them to a more spiritual existence. Both of these things, the idea of bringing them closer to God, bringing them to purity, bringing them to spirituality. Okay. The another idea of Asher Yetze Lifnehem, Asher Yovo Lifnehem, he goes before them, echoes what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says about the following Gemara. The Gemara says, Be'ikvas of the Mashiach, Pnei Hador Kipnei Akelev, that before Mashiach comes, the face of the generation will be like the face of a dog. And that means that the leaders are the face of the generation, the leaders will be like dogs. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says what it means is the following. If you see, if a person would come from another planet and see a man walking a dog, so the dog walks ahead on the leash, what would he assume? That this planet is inhabited by four-legged creatures that lead around two-legged creatures, because the dog is walking in the front and the man's behind. So it's obviously the dog is leading the man. Except if he watches them closely, when they come to a crossroads, the dog looks back to see where the man wants to go. Then he realizes it's not the dog leading the man, but it's the man leading the dog. He says, in the time before Mashiach, things will be so bad that the leaders will be like dogs. It'll look like they're leading. They're walking in the front. But every time they have to make a decision, they'll look back to see what the people want and see what's popular. And they'll do what's popular and not what's right. That's not the kind of leader you want. Therefore, the Torah says, Asher Yetze Lifnehem, who will taka go before them and lead them, not necessarily be led by them and just look like they're walking in the front, like a dog looks like he's walking in the front. Another idea of the dog, the Kutzker Rebbe says, there's two leaders of a flock. There's the shepherd, and then there's the sheepdog. The difference between them is all the dog can do is to make an outside incentive for the sheep not to run away, to stay together. If it's one of the sheep tries to stray or get away, the dog barks and puts them back in their place. But it doesn't give the sheep a reason why to want to be together. It doesn't give them anything positive. Just keeps them from dispersing. The real shepherd takes care of the needs of the sheep and gives them a positive reason why they should want to be part of the flock, why they shouldn't want to run away. So a real leader is the kind of leader who's not just like the dog, who's going to give an external incentive, right, and just externally keep the flock together, but it's going to keep them together in a very positive way. That's the relationship between the shepherd and the flock. So the leader of the Jewish people gives them reason to want to be united and to want to have a connection with God, and serves as an example, and also pushes them to do what's right, even when if they don't want to follow that example, or for other reasons that they can't follow the example. So those are the two functions of a leader. With that, I want to explain the following Gemara. The Gemara says that the Zakenim, the elders of the generation, when they saw the switch between Moshe and Yoshua, they said, Pnei Moshe k'pnei chama. Moshe was like the sun, and the face of Yoshua was like the moon. Oy lanu me'osha busha, they to us from that embarrassment, or they to us may also klima. Busha and klima are both embarrassed. We'll see the difference between them. What's the Gemara mean?
So
I was thinking, what? Yeah, we'll see who was embarrassed for what. In any case, what does it mean? Moshe was like the sun and Yoshua was like the moon. According to what we said, I think we can explain the Gemara in the following way. Moshe Rabbeinu was so above human beings, regular human beings, that the people couldn't look at him. Like you can't look at the sun. They couldn't really follow an example of Moshe Rabbeinu because he was too far beyond them. The Torah hints to the fact that they couldn't even look at Moshe Rabbeinu's face. He had to put on a mask. Moshe Rabbeinu was not the kind of leader that could be an example to the people because he was too far removed from them. So Moshe Rabbeinu actively led the people. He was like the sun. The sun gives warmth and light or whatever, but you can't look at it and emulate it. It's too hard to look at. So Moshe Rabbeinu was the kind of leader who actively affected the Jewish people, but didn't serve as an example to them, per se. Yoshua, on the other hand, was more down to their level. So he didn't have that. He reflected all of his power from Moshe Rabbeinu, like the moon reflects from the sun. But the moon you can look up to with the stars and use it for navigation. You can use it as a model, as an example. But it doesn't shine. It doesn't bring light to the world or heat or whatever. It's just there. Yoshua was the other kind of leader. Yoshua was the kind of leader who led by example, in addition. Moshe Rabbeinu led them fresh out of Egypt when they weren't so interested and willing to do what was right. They constantly were sinning and straying. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to actively lead them. Yoshua, on the other hand, after 40 years in the desert, the new generation, they were gung-ho on listening to Yoshua. And therefore, they didn't need to be led actively. They just needed an example to follow. So Yoshua was like the moon. He was like the one who led them by example. And Moshe was like the sun. He was too great to be an example, but he led them in a very active way. Therefore, the difference between busha and klima is the following. Busha is what you are embarrassed from yourself, right? Busha is where you feel inadequate. What's the word I'm looking for? Disappointed in yourself. So you're embarrassed because you didn't reach your potential. Klima is where somebody else embarrasses you. You're insulted. Okay. Where do we see this? Right before that, in the Gemara, says like this, that in Olam Haba, every tzaddik will have his own little cubicle, his own little chuppah. And everybody will be burnt because of the chuppah of his friend. Meaning the following. And then it says the same thing. Oy lanu me'oso busha, they to that embarrassment. Oy lanu me'oso klima. Meaning the following. When a person gets to Olam Haba, he's going to have his own little chuppah. Now, if he was a big tzaddik, he's going to have, you know, a suite, penthouse suite or whatever, presidential suite. If he wasn't such a big tzaddik, he'll have a nice furnished room. If he was a lesser tzaddik, he'll have a little butka, whatever. So first, a person's going to be embarrassed because of the nature of his chuppah, because he could have done better, and he's embarrassed for himself. How come I didn't function in this world where I would have a nicer chuppah? So that's self-embarrassment, disappointment in what you did yourself. Then he's going to look at his neighbor's chuppah, his friend's chuppah, and he's going to say, wow, why didn't I learn from him so I could have had a better one? And that, he's going to insult me. Not he's going to insult me, but comparing myself to him, the insult's going to come from my friend. Look what he was able to do and I couldn't do that. So there's going to be two embarrassments. One, I'm embarrassed of myself that I didn't achieve more. And secondly, I'm going to be embarrassed from my friend because he was able to achieve more and I couldn't do that. He was my friend. Why didn't I learn from him? Why didn't I use him as an example? So one embarrassment is going to come from inside and one's going to be generated by what I see by somebody else. Therefore, the same thing over here. the Moshe Rabbeinu, right, when they, what's it called, when they saw the Moshe Rabbeinu aggressively tried to lead them and what's it called, and enlighten them and warm them up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they didn't fulfill their potential, right? They could have taken advantage of what Moshe Rabbeinu had to offer, and they didn't. That's called embarrassment from disappointment of not reaching your potential. And then they looked at Yoshua as an example, and he made them feel another kind of embarrassment. Why couldn't I be like him? He makes me feel bad, right? Because Yoshua could do it, why couldn't I do it? So by Moshe that didn't exist, because Moshe Rabbeinu was way beyond him. So Moshe Rabbeinu generated that inner disappointment and embarrassment, and Yoshua generated the one that came from the outside. Comparing myself to him, I come up lacking. So he generates my embarrassment. So that's the busha and the klima. Okay. In any case, and that could be explain another Gemara. The Gemara says that originally God created the sun and the moon to be the same. I mean, both of them shone. And then the moon complained and said, "Ein shnei malachim mishtamshim bekeser echad." You can't have two kings with one crown. You don't need two kings to do the same thing. So God said, "You're right." So he diminished the moon. And then God said to the Jewish people, "Bring a sacrifice on Rosh Chodesh, right, on the new moon, to atone for me for diminishing the moon." Very difficult Gemara. But I think we could explain it the following way. The idea of there can't be two kings with one crown means you don't need two leaders with the same function. If both of them are sons, that means that both of them are actively influencing the Jewish people. You don't need two active influences. So God said, "You're right. So let's make two different kinds of rulers here. One that rules by actively influencing, like the sun, light, heat, and so on. And the other one will be an example. Won't do anything actively, but be an example they can follow, like the moon." So he diminished the moon. But it seems like the moon was diminished. But once the Jewish people use the moon as an example, on Rosh Chodesh, we use the moon as an incentive to the renewal of the world and to get closer to God, right? So Rosh Chodesh is utilization of the moon for its purpose of being an example. So then that atones, kibiyocho, for God diminishing it, because it gives purpose to the diminishing. It makes it understandable why God did that and why it was a positive thing, wasn't a negative thing. So that's the could be the idea of that Gemara. Now, all of this is on the positive side. Hold the questions to the end. All this is on the positive side. When they served the golden calf and they came to Aaron to give him a leader, they also wanted a leader. They thought Moshe was dead, and they also wanted a leader to take his place. They described the leader very differently. Kum aseilonu Elohim. They didn't want an ish, somebody to be like a husband and a wife to bring God's presence. They wanted an Elohim, a power, a God, to separate between them and God, to take the place of God. Elohim, right? Not ish or Elohim, but Elohim. Like an intermediary that will separate between them and God, asher yelchul, who will walk in front of us, not bring us out, not bring us in, not be an example, walk in front of us and be a intermediary between us and God, separating between us and God. And that is the diametric antithesis, the opposite of what a leader is supposed to be. Here they wanted a leader to separate between them and God, and the purpose of the leader is to connect them to God, to bond them with God. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, and they, because they misunderstood completely the purpose of the leader. So Moshe Rabbeinu came down and he saw that the Jewish people had separated themselves from God. They were dancing around the eagle. They made this eagle which separated them. They were committing terrible sins of Gilui Arayos. They had murdered Chur, Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah, the major sins that separate us from God, which we'll see, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He took the Luchos HaBris, the tablets of the covenant, which is supposed to bond us to God. Those are the bond, the bris. A bris is a bond. And he broke them. And he said, if you think that the leader is supposed to be an intermediary between you and God, basically a separation, then that kind of leader breaks the bond with God. And that's what a leader could be if you misunderstand what it is. So he took the luchos and he broke them. And they got shocked and they realized that what they're doing is creating a leader who's going to break their bond with God. And that jolted them back into reality. So that's what it says. God thanked Moshe Rabbeinu, Yasher Kochacha, that you broke the luchos. What does it mean? Your power became straight. Yasher Kochacha. May your power be straight, meaning until now the Jewish people misunderstood and distorted your power. By breaking the luchos, you jolted them into a reality that that's not the purpose of a leader, to break the luchos. And if they have their distorted idea, that's basically what they're doing. They're making their leader break the luchos. So that was the relying on the leader too much. And that's why later on, the Rabbanu Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu, Psal Lecha, okay, you broke the luchos, now you recreate them, you carve them, right? So you show them that the same way that the leader, if you misunderstand and distort his power, can break that bond with God, that same leader can create the bond with God. And that's why, when the Jewish people, transgress those kinds of sins, Gilei Arayos, No, just that they're going to clean the filters, so now it's colder. Okay. Stop. Okay. Ani margish is a. It's better. Okay. And ha'tafkid shali lechamim otam ve'tafkid shalcha lekarer otam as tein latzol tafkid shali. Okay. I said my job is to make you a little warmer and his job is to make you colder, so let me do my job. When the Jewish people transgressed the three sins, Gilei Arayos, it says that God hates immorality, hatred meaning that he separates himself from it. Sina, Ava, is a bond and a connection, that's love, and hatred is where there's a separation. So Gilei Arayos brings Tuma to the world, just like husband and wife bring God's presence. Immorality chases away God's presence, right? And Shvichas Damim, murder, right, destroys God's image in the world and pushes God out of the world. That's murder. And Avodah Zarah obviously separates between the Jewish people and God. So then, when we separate ourselves from God, he separates himself from us. So what destroyed the first place of Mikdash? Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah. We showed God that we weren't interested in that bond, so God broke the bond. And he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and he put us in Galus and turned his face away from us. Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. Sinas Chinam, like we said, when the Jewish people are united, then they can be united with God. When we are separated, then we can't be connected to God, because God's one, and if we're not one, we can't be connected. More than that, in when a person hates another Jew, for no reason, just because he hates him intrinsically, that means that he doesn't realize that God loves that Jew. He thinks that God hates the Jewish people too. So if God hates us, then he's separated from us. And that's why it says, V'yohavta l'reacha kamocha. It doesn't mean love your neighbor like you love yourself. Ani Hashem. Just like I, God, love you, I also love your neighbor too. And therefore you have to love him too. Because you're all loved by me, so why in the world should you hate someone that I love? So that is what's it called, why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because of Sinas Chinam. Whenever we break our bond with God, then reciprocally he breaks the bond with us. We come closer, he comes closer. We go away, he goes away. Okay. And that's why it says that in the desert, what led to God turning his face from us and leaving us in the desert for 40 years and not bringing us to Eretz Yisrael, where we'd have that close relationship with us, was Bechiyah Shel Chinam. because we cried a useless cry, just like the hatred is a useless hatred. Why do we cry? The bechiyah shel chinam led from sinas chinam, because we said, you know why God took us out of Egypt? Because he hates us and he wanted to kill us in the desert. So we assumed that God hated us. If God hates us, then basically we hate him, because kemayim panim al panim, people reflect other people's feeling, and we hate each other. So it led to the disunity of the Jewish people, because if God hates us, then I can hate other Jews, and if God hates us, then we hate him, and there's no bond. So that led to the gzeira of the meraglim, of staying 40 years and God turning his face from them during those 40 years. What's the tikkun to that? Bechiyah shel mamash, crying out to God, because you realize that God does love you and he wants to help you, and if you cry like a baby, that he'll help you just like a mother helps the baby. That kind of cry. They cried because they thought God hated them, and they cried out of a total feeling of abandonment. We're crying now on Tisha B'Av because we believe that God hasn't abandoned us and he really cares about us, and if we cry like a baby, he'll help us. That's why the crying that we do on Tisha B'Av is called kinos. Kinos is the same letters as tinok, as a baby, and it's the same letters as tikkun, as the correction. That crying corrects the other crying. And that's the whole idea of Bein HaMetzorim. We're going to start on Tuesday, the 21-day period, the 3 weeks between Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. And those are 21 days. They correspond to the 21 days between Rosh Hashanah and Hoshana Rabbah. It's a time of coming closer to God. Here also, it's a time to come closer to God by realizing how far we've strayed, and by recognizing the distance, we'll have that desire to get closer. So the 21 days of recognizing what happens when we pull ourselves away from God, and how bad that is, and having the desire to get closer, has the same effect as Rosh Hashanah to Hoshana Rabbah, of coming closer to God. And that's why the beginning of those 21 days is Shivasar B'Tammuz, which will be on Tuesday, and the end of the 21 days is Tisha B'Av. Shivasar B'Tammuz represents the causes of getting farther away from God, and once we're farther away from God, then that brings destruction. Tisha B'Av represents the destruction, the Chorban, right? But Chorban, God reacting to separating himself from us by destruction, by Golus, is precipitated by us pulling ourselves away from God. So therefore, what five things happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz? The things that we strayed and went away from God. What happened, the five things on Tisha B'Av? The five things on Tisha B'Av were the, what's it called, were the things that were destruction. Let's see what they were. The five things that happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz was that the luchos were broken. We said that Moshe Rabbeinu, when they distorted the purpose of a leader to be an intermediary between them and God, the Moshe Rabbeinu showed them, what you're doing is making me break the luchos. So that was the idea of us separating ourselves from God. The second thing that happened on Yud Zayin B'Tammuz is butel hatamid, the carbon hatamid, the carbon sibur was bottled. Not only karbanos, right, that closeness to God, we stopped bringing sacrifices, and we stopped bringing the communal sacrifice because we lost that connection with each other. Nisraf HaTorah, the Torah was burnt, and they put up an idol in the Kodesh HaKodesh. All these things are symbols of separating and distancing yourself from God. And finally, the city of Yerushalayim was broken open. The walls united us. Once the walls were breached, every man for himself. There was no more unity. So all these were the causes of separation from God and separation from each other. What did it lead to? 3 weeks later, it led to was the five things that happened on Tisha B'Av. Both Batei Mikdash were destroyed. When we separate ourselves from God, he separates himself from us, destroys the Beit HaMikdash, takes his Shechina away, puts us into Golus. The Beitar was destroyed, which was a place where they had the hope of regaining all of that, and Mashiach, Bar Kochva, being Mashiach, and that was dashed and destroyed. The city of Yerushalayim, later on, was plowed over and made into a place of idolatry, total destruction. And the last thing was the, or for the first thing, the gzeira on our avos in the midbar, the meraglim, 40 years had to be in the midbar. God, let's call, basically destroyed that generation. So the shivasa b'tamuz represents our distancing ourselves from God, and Tisha B'Av represents what comes from that destruction. And could be, that's why five things happen here and five things there. The number 10 represents unity. The world was created with 10 mamaros, there's 10 aseres hadibros. Why? Because 10 is a number of unity. Till 10, each number, each integer is separate. 10 unites them into one unit of tens. That's why after 10, there's not a new number, it's a chadesre, shtemesre. You build on the unit of tens, which is a unit. In the decimal system, in the Arabic numerals, same thing. 9, every till 9 is different letter, different numbers. 10 is 1, 10, and 0, 1. It's a unit. So, the number 10 represents unity. When you break it in half, 5 and 5, so you totally break that unity. So we break the unity that we had with God, which is represented by 10, and we're 5 over here, and he's 5 over there, and we're totally separated, and the Jewish people lose their unity. That is the idea of destruction. Destruction is when we lose our unity, sinas chinam, between ourselves, and gilui arayis, shlichus dam, and avodah zarah, we lose our unity with God. And then we become two fives instead of one 10. And through the mourning and recognizing all of this, recognizing how distant we are, and recognizing that because of that distance we've experienced destruction and exile and whatever, then we have a desire to get back, and we know how to get back by once again bonding ourselves with the Rabban Shalom and coming back to him. And the Mela, that'll take away the destruction, that'll take away the galus. It's automatic. And that is the idea that Kol HaMesabel Yerushalayim, whoever mourns through Yerushalayim, Zoche V'ro V'Simchasa, not he'll see the Simcha in the future, but he immediately now recognizes what could be, and he sets to doing what's necessary to do to correct that. That already is a Simcha in itself, that he's on the path to correcting the destruction. Now, any questions? Yeah. The idea is the following. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain. He saw the people dancing around the eagle or whatever, realizing that they had decided they wanted somebody to take his place, a leader that would be an intermediary, a separation between them and God. Not somebody who would bring them closer to God and represent to them what God wants of them and bond them with God, but walk in front of them and be a God to himself. Right, so another God to separate between God and them. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if that's what you think I am, that you think that I am an intermediary, a separation between you and God, then you make me the kind of person who's breaking the luchos. So he broke the luchos in front of him. This is the kind of leader you think I am? The leader's going to break the bond between you and God? That's not what the leader's supposed to be, but that's what you're intimating by, in my place, taking an eagle that separates between you and God. So that means that you replaced me with this. You think that that's my function? So then that function basically is break the luchos. And by shocking them and breaking the luchos, they realize that that's not the kind of leader they want. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, sometimes bitula ikiyuma, sometimes by destroying the Torah, you now make it possible to rebuild it. So once the people were jolted, they realized this is taka what we're saying. And that's not what they jolted them back to reality. There was a chance now to once again create those luchos and create that bond. And the same Moshe Rabbeinu who broke it now was the one who refashioned it. Yeah.
Is that similar to when the Jews asked for king?
Yeah. So it could be that that's one of the ideas. Now, if the king is to inspire you and bond you to God is one thing. But Shmuel sensed in their desire for a king that they wanted somebody to come between them and God, to replace God, and that was the wrong thing. It's one interpretation of what was wrong, because the Torah says you're supposed to have a king, but they misunderstood the function of that king.